Hello neighbors, welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. Horticulture and agriculture, are they two sides of the same coin, two shoots off the same root? Maybe the difference between the two is simply a matter of scale and types of plants and the nature of the environment used for growing. Besides, I've never known a food producer who doesn't also like a variety of plants that are simply pretty, and vice versa. Today we visit two businesses that are involved in horticulture.
To be honest, I don't deal with Newfoundland at all. I always joke that St. John's might as well be the moon to us. We share license plates, that's about it, and bureaucracy, but we're a world away from Newfoundland. Yeah. It really is.
There was no book that you could read and learn when we started doing this. You could find all kinds of books that told you how to propagate in the UK or in the US, but there was nothing that would apply here in Newfoundland.
We start in Goose Bay, Labrador, at the Birdhouse Garden Market, right there on Hamilton River Road. Like many businesses here, Birdhouse's specialty is that they do a bit of everything. They do bedding plants, landscaping, garden supplies, floral arrangements, ornamentals, vegetable starters, decking materials, even chicken feed. It's a weekday morning in late August, before the heat sets in and the phone calls of the day start.
I'm Bernard Bird. My wife and I, Christina Bird, own Birdhouse Garden Market. We took over an existing greenhouse garden center about 11 years ago and said, if it doesn't work after a couple of years, we'll leave. And here we are in year 11.
So it must be working.
It's working, yes. Yeah. At least sustainable, so.
Did you have a background in greenhouses or in growing?
My wife went to school for horticulture. She's actually, yeah. I think her diploma is in landscape design, but it's a few drafting courses different than the full horticulture one. She went to Niagara College for it. We joke that it's her business and I'm the fix-it guy. Through osmosis, I've become a gardener myself.
So there's a couple of pieces of your product mix here. So you sell bedding plants for home gardeners, you sell vegetables as well. What's the mix?
It's hard to say exactly number-wise, but we do a lot of vegetable starters. Your beets, broccoli, cauliflower, lettuce, tomatoes, cucumbers. Every year we try to add on a few more. Like this year, what was it? We did Jerusalem artichoke.
How'd it go?
I doubt we sold more than a handful. We just threw a pile of them out there the other day, but you know, you never know until you try.
The first year you have to pretty much give them away maybe until people figure out how to use them, I suppose.
Yeah, and even then, like precious space in gardens and stuff. Yeah. I don't even think we planted one in ours, but we have these ideas and intentions try to get a few different things in the garden because anything will grow in the summer.
So what are the advantages of growing in this climate here in Central Labrador?
Typically it's sunny, which is great for us in the greenhouse. I mean, sun is everything. It's that solar input for heat and photosynthesis. You need it. Typically, Goose Bay area, sunny.
What's the connection between agriculture and horticulture in this province? Is there communication back and forth from your perspective?
There is a bit, but I think the onus is on the growers, and to be honest, I don't deal with Newfoundland at all. Even our supply chain is Nova Scotia and Quebec. I always joke that St. John's might as well be the moon to us. To try to put it in perspective for other people, when I go to other parts of Canada even and they don't understand Labrador, they say, oh, aren't you part of Newfoundland? And I say, we share license plates. That's about it, you know, and bureaucracy, but we're a world away from Newfoundland. Yeah. It really is.
There's a lot of pressure to try to have new entrants into agriculture and horticulture. Do you have some suggestions about how to make it easier?
When we started, I can't say it was desperation, but it was certainly a giant leap of faith. We sold everything we owned in Ontario, moved back in with my parents as a married couple. We all knew that would be challenging, but we got through that. Honestly, the first year, even with Aboriginal money to help us out, we reinvested every paycheck back into the business to keep it going. And in hindsight, we got a good deal on it at the time, and we made it happen. But certainly, do your homework. There's lots of money out there for you as far as government help. And keep your day job. I always say it's great for somebody who, if they're in the school system, you've got the months off in the summer. Have a go at it that way. But to quit a full-time job and go into farming in Labrador, you'd either have to be more brave than I or more foolish than I would think.
Do you do landscaping as well as part of the mix?
Yeah, the demand was there from the consumer side. Yeah. And we ran into a guy who had some experience in landscaping. And we had him for the first 3 years and he kind of got us on the go. And now it's money-wise, it's probably the biggest part of our business.
That's not entirely uncommon among greenhouses, is it? That's a primary revenue stream.
And you're wholesaling to yourself as far as plants for the gardens, the seed, lime, fertilizer, that type of thing too. So,
have you seen a change in the 11 years in terms of more people having backyard gardens, more people being interested in growing some of their own food?
I think so. It's hard to know, to see the forest for the trees, pardon the metaphor there, because we're in the middle of it. But I'd like to think, giving ourselves a pat on the back, that we've raised the game. You know, people can see what can grow here and how properties can look. So yeah, it's all good. It's all a step in the right direction to get people growing their own food and looking after their own properties.
Yeah, yeah. You also, you provide chicken feed.
We do, yeah.
You fill that niche as well.
Yeah, and we've had chickens ourselves for the last 3 years. I think the most we've overwintered is 13. We're down to 2 now just through attrition, you know. Yeah. We don't eat them ourselves. It's just the eggs. I know a lot of people think like they're saving the world by having a few chickens in their backyard, but when you look at the efficiencies that are built into these big operations that everybody looks at and thinks it's a crime, there's nothing efficient about doing it in your backyard. Right. It's a hobby. It's a novelty.
Yeah. Yeah. Is the value of that more in making people understand the connection to agriculture?
Yeah, I hear stories about my parents' generation. They always had some sheep, mutton, as my mom would call them, and somebody had a cow, and that's how they got their stuff in Outport, Newfoundland. Yeah. There just wasn't any other way. And even around here, where they were more isolated, maybe in the 60s and 70s, even into the 80s, people used to bring in a lot more meat birds and process their own food. Yeah. I think a lot of that has gone by the wayside, but there's a lot of small operations and a lot of, almost like a renaissance in that, because there's got to be 30, 40, 50 people with chickens in their backyard in town now.
Do you have a song that I can weave into this?
A song?
I don't know if it's a greenhouse song or...
I don't know, greenhouse song. I'm just thinking my favorite band is Dawes, and they're...
Dawes, okay, yeah.
You know them?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they've got a new album out.
I could go on talking, or I could stop. Ring out each memory till I get every drop. Sift through the details of the others involved. The true crime would be thinking it's just one person's fault. Like an honest signature on a fake ID. Like the guilty conscience with the innocent plea. You can just ignore it, put it out of mind. But ain't it funny how the past won't ever let something lie? Let's make a list of all the things the world has put you through. Let's raise a glass to all the people you're not speaking to. I don't know what else you wanted me to say to you. Things happen, that's all they ever do. In a different time, on a different floor, I might mourn the loss of who I'm not anymore. So I'm driving up to Oakland for a good look back and a few revisions to my plan of attack.
That's the Dawes and their song Things Happen, played by request of my first guest today, Bernard Bird. I start this section by asking him for some policy actions on how the province might meet its target of doubling food production by 2022.
I mean, they're already throwing with the old Growing Forward and the new CAP program.
Yeah.
It's 75 cents on the dollar, for my expression, is almost anything you can dream of. It's still, I'm on the fence about it, and we're in that business of it. And the issue is always labor. The issue is always the risk. Frost. Mm-hmm. You know, you could lose a lot of stuff. To double it by 2022, I don't know. I mean, we have these greenhouses and people say, why don't you use them over the winter? I've offered them to people and groups and organizations. I said, you pay my hydro bill, I won't even charge you rent. Nobody's taking me up on it. It's too risky.
The cost of production is a difficult thing to get for a new entrant to try to figure out if it's going to make money on it. I'm sure you have a better sense of that because you know your expenses and so on. It is an unsure prospect.
Yep. Even what we do, we've pushed everything later. We used to start the end of February, beginning of March. Now we push it into April. I have an alarm system that I kind of rigged up myself. There's commercially available ones that are 10 times as expensive, but this one works well. Yeah. It's a bunch of bimetallic temperature sensors, and when they make contact, it sends a little radio signal to a dialer, and the dialer calls my phone. My phone is on my hip. It's on the table when I'm having supper. It's next to my bedstand. When these greenhouses are open, it's an absolute emergency if the temperature drops. And I've had to deal with it a few times over the years. We've had losses over the years, but you know, you could put $40,000 worth of plants in these greenhouses, each one, something goes wrong, which it will eventually, you lose it in a matter of minutes. if it's 20 below outside. It's a scary prospect. Yeah, it really is. And people say, what about backups? It's like, well, to what degree? I've got 60 kilowatts of heat in each one. Do you know what size generator that is? Get a 100 kilowatt generator the size of a house for a backup? Not feasible.
In addition to trying to get new entrants in, sometimes you ignore the fact that people who are operating like you sometimes have trouble getting labor. And the other thing would be succession planning. Like, how do you exit? You're way far away from that point.
No, I mean, it should always be on your mind. We don't have the problem of not owning our land. We're here in town.
Yes.
And this is our land. We can do as we please with it within the regulations. Yeah. If we sell, we're not attached to the fact that this would have to remain a greenhouse.
Yeah.
We have 4,000 square feet of retail space now. Succession planning for us, I think we're in a unique situation and a unique location. I do feel bad for the farmers out on the road. And that's probably the biggest hurdle for us getting involved down on the road. Labor, number one. And number two is, what's your exit strategy? Yeah. You've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of equipment and buildings to try to sell, and somebody else would have to take over and run with it. And they still don't own it, so it's a difficult prospect.
You've given some thought to maybe expanding into outside, getting some farmland, some of this agricultural lease land.
Yep. I have two business plans, well, phase one, phase two of farm. Everything is dreamt out, ready to go, and we haven't pulled the trigger on it for mostly labor reasons. Every year I say I'm going to make it more efficient, it's going to be easier on us, and then by the middle of June, I'm ready for a mental health break and thinking, why would I ever dream that I could take something else on? But you come talk to me in January, I'm gung ho.
That's the time to sign on the line.
Not this time of year, but it's a big pill to swallow to even think of taking on more. And this year is the first year we've got seasonal agricultural workers. They're professionals, and we chose Mexico. There's a bunch of different countries that do this. We had two Mexican guys come here this year, and it did make a huge difference in the quality of product we were able to put out, the volume of product we were able to put out, and even finished product. Now we sell tomatoes out there, we sell herbs, little bits and pieces out of our garden. We don't have a huge garden, but we sell what we don't eat ourselves. Every little bit counts.
What's your favorite plant?
My favorite plant. The strawberries. There's never any left this time of year.
Oh, I see.
When they turn red, we're fighting over them, and when they first turn red, but they're long gone. Now, these tomatoes you see everywhere.
They look lovely.
They look pretty haggard this time of year, but that's when they're producing. We can come out every day and pick 5 pounds of fully ripe cherry tomatoes off these. And the other greenhouse over there, we have some bigger ones like the beefsteak and the one's called Better Boy, Golden Acre. A couple of different tomatoes we're doing, but they're not quite ripe yet.
So I caught you at the beginning of the morning on a Tuesday. What's on your schedule for today?
Well, we dropped off the two Mexican guys. They went back today, just running out of work for them to do. Yeah. And when they're here away from their families, they want 60, 70 hours a week. I can't get any of the locals to work a 40-hour week. These guys are begging for 60, 70, 80 hours a week. It's, the irony is not lost on me there. Moving a hot tub, getting the guys going on another landscaping job. The day-to-day operations in the greenhouse, I don't have a whole lot to do with this time here because I'm fully into landscaping, to be honest. Let's make a list of all the things the world has put you through. Let's raise a glass to all the people you're not speaking to. I don't know what else you wanted me to say to you. Things happen, that's all they ever do. I think I'll see Lily, see where she stands. I can't help how I feel, I don't think anyone can. Sometimes we're lovers, sometimes we're friends. Behold the magnetism between two dead ends. Let's make a list of all the things the world has put you through. Let's raise a glass to all the people you're not speaking to. I don't know what else you wanted me to say to you. Things happen, that's all they ever do. Let's make a list of all the things the world has put you through. Let's raise a glass to all the people you're not speaking to. I don't know what else that you want me to say to you. Things happen, it's all they ever do. It's all they ever do. It's all they ever do. It's all they ever do.
For the next interview today, we leave Labrador and head to almost St. John's, you know, that other place that, according to Bernard, might as well be the moon. We're in Logie Bay, a community with a famous song named after it. We're in a lovely forested location not far from the ocean itself. This horticulture operation specializes in local trees and local plants. It's early evening, the time of day when the illusion of relaxation is in the air, unless, of course, there are still plants to be watered.
My name is Chris Swires, and my wife's name is Debbie, so thus the name CD's Trees. And it became a play on words as well, so that we say CD's Trees. And a lot of people caught on, some didn't. We've been established here now since 1995, so this is our 23rd year in business. The first years were pretty slow. Probably for the first 5 years, we didn't sell very much stuff, but we went through our learning curve, and we learned how to do a lot of the things that we wanted to do. Then once we got an inventory that was big enough to start selling, then we had a go at that.
Do you remember what inspired you to start growing trees at the scale?
I do, exactly, yes. My sister-in-law and her husband had a nursery in Clarenville. And I remember my brother-in-law saying one day, he said, you know, there's nowhere in Newfoundland where you can buy a tree or a shrub that was produced here. So I said, well, let's give it a go, right? We had the space at the time. We could do it. We didn't have all the knowledge that we wanted, but, you know, we said, let's give it a try and see what happens with it, right? So we started and built our first greenhouse and filled it up with plants and then kept every year building on that and adding more frames and more plants. And mostly now we use the frames just for overwintering because it's easier. If you don't put them inside, then something's going to eat it. Moose is a big one.
You get moose up here?
Oh, we get moose all the time. There's another little critter called a meadow vole. Very similar to a mouse, but yeah, I think he's vegetarian. Tell you what, he can eat his share. You know, if they get it, even when they're inside in the frames, you know, if one of those guys gets in there, and they can eat a lot of stuff.
So, are there things you'd do differently if you were to start out again?
Yeah, some. I mean, you know, we learned all about fertilization, for instance. Yeah. I remember one of the very first years. You know, we didn't have a lot of experience with how to fertilize and what to use and all this kind of stuff, I think I had, I don't know, maybe a couple of hundred blue spruce that I was growing. They were starting to look good, but we over-fertilized, next thing they were all blasty red instead of blue.
So
that's it.
One of the advantages of having all local is that it seems like it would be more likely to grow here than if you're bringing something in from somewhere else.
Well, that's for sure. I think a lot of the business of growing here equates to having a plant that grows in the same climate where it's going to live. So it grows up here first and is very much acclimatized to how Newfoundland weather works. And then when somebody takes it and puts it in their garden, well, there's a lot less stress for that plant, I think.
You talked about soil early, and if in the new subdivisions when they're putting in trees and so on, they don't really have soil, do they?
No, I think in St. John's, it's about 3-4 inches of topsoil and the rest is rock. And I've seen them, even in the developments close around here, the first thing they do is they go in and scrape everything flat and anything that's any good to take it and pile it up somewhere else. And then, when they come back and do the landscaping, well, they sell the soil back to you.
Usually we talk about the challenges in growing things in this province. But are there advantages?
It's not all bad, there's lots of challenges, I'll give you that. We've encountered numerous challenges, but I think in some aspects, like spring might be slow to start or whatever, but our falls are great, and so a lot of plants thrive in that, it gives them that much longer to grow and a little bit longer time to harden off, and the plants have a long time to shut down and get ready for winter, and so, in some respects that probably helps them a little bit. There we go, speak of the other half.
Hi, how are you?
This is my wife, Debbie.
It's nice to meet you.
Are you seeing any changes in terms of what the consumers are asking for? Like, are they wanting more fruit trees or berries?
I would think so. Like, I remember first when we started, we did the standard, potentilla, spireas, and everybody came, oh, I'll have one of these and these. And then it seemed like they wanted the more up-to-date. So we're trying to stay ahead of, what should we have next? But lately, it seems that said, like, people are just not as interested in landscape plants at all. No, fruit, fruit trees.
More small fruit.
Fruit trees and really there's
stuff you can eat, basically.
Stuff you can eat.
Yeah, something you can get as a purpose for it, as opposed to just looking pretty for 2 weeks of the year.
In this province, agriculture and horticulture cross over regularly, or maybe they don't. I don't know.
No, I think they do, and more so now, you know, like what I notice anyway is I find the millennials are more interested in the food. They're all the foodies, and more so than we were, say, as a baby boomer, you know, we were more interested in, we wanted to have the vegetables, but we also wanted to have the landscape, and we wanted everything to look nice.
We didn't really know what food security meant, because, I mean, we rarely had to buy, like, fresh produce at the supermarket when, when I was growing up. Got some things.
Because you were growing it, but now what I find is there's kind of a combination of both, and folks, a lot of folks want it to look nice, but they want to be able to eat it as well. and you know, people are using plants that you normally wouldn't use in a shrub bed or flower bed, and it, you know, it works too, I think.
So do you have a song that I could play during this? Is there a special song?
I'll get you one for sure. We'll think of something.
Tunes Tiptoe Home and Clyde's Kisses, as suggested by my guests Chris and Debbie Swires.
Yeah. Did you get any call for grapes?
There is a grape story.
You gotta tell the grape story.
I got some grape plants. I got a couple of
rotted. Yeah, growing in the back of the green. Those have been there for years.
I didn't really know a lot about how to grow grapes and all this, so I said, I'll get some plants and I'll learn how to do it, you know. They weren't doing that well. They grow every year, but I never saw a grape forever. And one day, this guy...
Italian background. Spanish or something.
I've spoken to people who have been in his greenhouse, and the grapes are lovely. And he does well, but he came in and
remember, he stood in the doorway right there. He said, oh! He said, you have the grape. Chris says, yeah, we have grapes. You know nothing about the grapes.
And I didn't. So I said, you're absolutely right. Yeah. I said, you know, fill me in. Tell me what I got to do. You know? And he did. He gave me a lot of good information.
Are there grapes on it now?
There are.
I have
grapes. This is probably the best grapes I've ever had. There's not a lot, but there's some there.
Yeah. And there's a lot of work done on trying to get new entrants. Are there suggestions you'd have?
Number one, it's like if somebody was starting out now, I really don't know how they would do it, because like the cost of land and infrastructure itself would be, I mean, we did it all with our own financing. Like we didn't.
A
government grant here and there for probably infrastructure might have helped somewhere along the line.
But we went very slowly. I built a lot of the pathways and I'll level all that space and stuff. I did most of that by hand, and I think it was 2006 when I finally got a tractor.
I know for us, like, we started like very, very small. We did all the work ourselves and just kind of grew it.
And we had the land, you know.
Yeah.
We bought the land very early in the game.
And I'm really super impressed with the young farmers that we saw, because like they're smart, they're educated.
Yeah. And they're gung-ho.
And they're gung-ho, and like, this is my life, and I'm, you know, why you really want to make a go of it and stuff like that.
But I think too that in some cases anyway, these guys are changing the face of farming, because you know, they're figuring out ways that the farm doesn't occupy them 24 7, right? Which I think was a big factor in a lot of people's choice whether or not they're going to do it. And when you take away that 24/7 factor, that makes a big difference as well.
So what's your favorite plant?
My favorite plant? That's a topic.
Yeah, for a long time, I liked hydrangea. At one point, I think we had 20 different kinds here.
Oh, I have something in my garden that a friend of mine brought in from the West Coast. It's a lady slipper. I know she said it's protected. She said, you're not supposed to pick it or anything, but she said, I was getting out of my car on the Ban Bay Highway. She said, yeah. I put my foot down. She said, I almost walked on it.
Yeah.
So she said, I picked it up, put it in her garden, and she said it flourished and multiplied. So she said, you can have a piece of this now.
Okay.
I love that flower. So I'm probably the story that goes with it, too.
We certainly don't propagate
the world here. It's just like, you know, it's in my garden.
So this is a Monday evening. Tomorrow morning, what happens here? What do you do? Like, first thing, do you have to water?
Water. Well, the water doesn't stop.
Like, we don't work here. We don't work here in the nursery.
Not during the daytime.
So we have our student here during the summer.
The average day starts, and there will be a sprinkler on, because I'll have had a sprinkler on overnight, at least one, sometimes two. And then in the early morning, around 6:30 or 7, I'll come up and change that. And then she comes in at 9, so she'll start rotating then every 2 hours and rotating her way through all the sprinklers. As well, this is kind of transplant season for us, so if we have plants that have outgrown the container they're in, then we move them to the next size up. And so she'll be doing some of that stuff.
Well, just like there's a concern about new entrants, there's always a concern about how do I find laborers?
It's not easy, right?
Yeah.
I'll give that. Not that it's been too much of a challenge for us, because we had two girls and they always had lots of buddies, and so we employed a lot of students here. Some of these kids come in and they work, boy oh boy do they ever work. But then you get other ones who probably hide in the woods and have a nap. We've had both extremes.
So the key is to have children and then hire their
friends.
Thanks so much for taking the time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Glad to be a part of it.
Wires, owner-operators, and ceaseless waterers at CD's Trees in Logie Bay. All of our guests today emphasize the long road to sustainability and horticulture in this province. It's lots of work, but there are plenty of benefits as well. And we can all hope that the ties between horticulture and agriculture continue to grow, propagate, and thrive. We just need to keep watering them.
I have two business plans, well, phase one, phase two of farm. Everything is dreamt out, ready to go, and we haven't pulled the trigger on it for mostly labor reasons.
Super impressed with the young farmers that we saw. It's like they're smart, they're educated,
and they're gung ho.
And they're gung ho. And like, this is my life, and you know, we really want to make a go of it.
To quit a full-time job and go into farming in Labrador, you'd either have to be more brave than I or more foolish than I would think.
Spring might be slow to start or whatever, but our falls are great. So a lot of plants thrive in that. You know, the plants have a long time to shut down and get ready for winter.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The songs for today's show were Things Happen by the Dawes and a set of tunes by Deirdre Connolly called Tiptoe Home and Clyde's Kisses. The theme music, Clock Old Hen, was done this week by the Good for Nothing String Band. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
In some cases anyway, these guys are changing the face of farming.